Now we'll start with that game in Mallow. Cork destroying UL today, 6-16 to 7 points. Michael Moynihan was in Mallow for the Irish Examiner, and he spoke to Joe.
Yeah, unfortunately, not a much improvement. Yeah, in fairness, you know, very surprising that UL were so poor. They fell away very badly, but Cork had a goal within 37 seconds of the game starting. Conor O'Driscoll, they were never late. They had 1-3 on the scoreboard after 5 minutes, and really and truly, you know, the first half was bad, the second half was even worse, because UL fell away totally.
Were Cork very relentless in terms of the way they started and the pace, or what happened?
Well, basically, they got a goal early on, the couple of points, and they were well ahead. Then they got a second goal over halfway through the first half. So they were winning about 2-5 to no score halfway through the first half. Then UL got into it a little bit. James O'Donoghue, Kerry Senior, very good player, got a couple of points. And it was 2-5, 2-6 to 3 points with about 5 minutes to go to halftime. Then Cork got another couple of points, and right in the stroke of halftime, they got a third goal. So it was 3-8 to 3 points at halftime, and really, it was all over. Then, almost on the resumption, they got another goal.
Nice.
So basically, the second half was just a procession of scores. I wouldn't say Cork were merciless and were going for the jugular. They were just able to open up the UL defence at will, and when there were goals on and when they had an overlap, they went for it. But, you know, they left a couple of goals after them as well, and they had a few wides. But, you know, it wasn't a case of trying to crush UL into the ground. It was just that UL seemed to, I won't say lose heart, but seemed to, you know, not exactly put the pedal to the floor once they fell behind, probably minding themselves maybe for the Fitzgibbon, which is coming up.
Like last week, I asked you, could you see any kind of defined system or style that Brian Copper was trying to play, and the weather played a big part in that because it was so bad last week in Mallow. Did you see any signs of anything this week, though?
Again, very hard to say because, you know, Cork were winning all over the field. The only danger man really that UL would have had was O'Donoghue up front, and he was starved of possession. Now, he looked promising every time he got the ball, but, you know, they just couldn't get the ball to him. Noel Galvin from Ballincollig beat him up for much of the match, but, I mean, that was about as much as you saw really in terms of tactics because, you know, with when they were dominating all over the field, it wasn't immediately obvious whether they were playing a long game or a short game, because any time they wanted to get a score they could. So I mean, everyone is really looking forward to next weekend and playing Kerry McGrath Cup final to maybe see some kind of hard evidence of some whatever tactical approach Brian Cope was going to take with his team.
Yeah, was there any sign of the much talked about black card today?
We had a black card in a few minutes, and there was a little bit of excitement over that because there wasn't much excitement anywhere else, but after that it tapered off because the game wasn't very competitive. There wasn't really an onus on guys to maybe try and hold their men, etc. I think next week, obviously Cork and Kerry senior football is going to be a lot more competitive, and I think that may be a fairer reflection of how much of an issue the black card is going to be, because even though it's a pre-season tournament, really, you know, obviously, you know, Cork have a new manager, they want to impress him. I mean, Fitzmaurice is only a year in the job, and, you know, he's missing a few lads who've retired, so his players are going to be keen to impress him. So there'll be something at stake. So it'll be interesting to see if referees have judged some of these fouls as having more intent next week than they did maybe today.
Yeah, did you have a chat with any of the Cork management or players after the game to get some reaction?
Yeah, we spoke to Brian Cuthbert again. You know, he had to admit that he wasn't learning a whole lot, you know, from games that you win by whatever 27 points.
Yeah.
And he was anxious for a good game as a good lead into the league. And, it, you know, the way he was talking about it, he's obviously, you know, champing at the bit to have competitive games, to have big games, and to have a full panel to pick from, because obviously, you know, there were a couple of Cork lads, Cantino Roker playing with UL today, you know, like some Michael Shields is up the country, studying in Dublin, Aid Walsh is on holidays, on Cadigan is studying. So, you know, they're still patching together a team a little bit, and, you know, their place is there. But I would say Brian is definitely counting down the days for the Westmeath opener in the National Football League.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, obviously, it was a bit of a mismatch today, but even still, was there any outstanding player for Cork? I suppose you'd have to look up to the forwards, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, Daniel Goulian, there were 2-4, 2-5. Donal O'Connor kicked a couple of good scores. You know, but to be honest, you know, UL weren't offering the stoutest resistance at the back that you could imagine. Some of the combined play, Mark Sugru again was impressive, but again, you know, there's a there's a consumer warning and the quality of the opposition. I think a lot will be, you know, decided next Sunday when we see, you know, Kerry, because obviously they're, you know, not. But Brian Cuthbert cited a stat that Kerry haven't lost the McGrath Cup game in 7 years, and he said they're probably be keen to make it 8 years next weekend. So that should be interesting.
You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. That's Michael Monaghan there of the Irish Examiner speaking. Cork's big win today over UL 6-16 to 7 points in the McGrath Cup semi-final. They now go on to face Kerry full time as well. The Britannia Stoke 3, Liverpool 5. The Harty Cup quarter-finals taking place on Wednesday. 3 Cork schools still in the competition. Hamilton High School Ballin take on Dungarvan CBS. Charleville CBS face Skulnatree Nodin AFED Dune, and St Francis College Rochertown up against Thurles CBS. To look ahead to all of those games, Josephine speaking to Dennis Hurley of the Irish Examiner.
I suppose you've 8 teams left and 3 of them are from Cork, so that's obviously very successful. Probably was the most you were going to get, given that Middleton and Rochertown were in the same group, so it was unlikely that both of them were going to come out of it. So I suppose having Hamilton in there is probably a bonus. Charleville maybe were looking at the group they had and fancying their chances, so having 3 is good, given that I suppose we're hearing so much about Cork's lack of success in the Harty in recent times. So hopefully one of them can go on and make a serious impact.
Yeah, like, do you think that talk about the lack of success may have been blown out of proportion a little bit? Because, like, maybe just at schools level, there are cycles of good players and all that kind of thing.
I think that's definitely the case. When things aren't going well, you look for any kind of a sign or a symptom, or a cause of why they're not going well, and then you see a trend, and you kind of jump on that and hold that up as the one reason. The other side of it, like, is that, you know, in third level, UCC and to a lesser extent CIT have been going very well in the Fitzgibbon in recent times, and they have helped to provide players for the Cork senior team. So I don't think, you know, you can look at one thing and say it's the root cause.
Yeah.
I think the lack of success in the Harty is probably a contributory factor, but I wouldn't be attaching a huge amount of significance to it.
Yeah, we'll go through the game. So, and we'll start with Hamilton High School Band, and obviously, like fantastic achievement to even get this far, considering the size of the school. And I know they won a recent Rebel Oak Award as well, and all that kind of thing. Can you put into context like the kind of achievement that this is, though, to get to the quarterfinals?
Well, it's a school with a little more than 300 pupils, and I think it's their fourth year ever in the Harty. They had 2 years in the mid-90s when it was just straight knockout and they lost the first round each time. Last year then they decided to go up from the B grade, because it is a once in a generation kind of a group that they have, and they wanted to give those players experience, and I think that decision has been vindicated. Really, this year they won the O'Callaghan Cup, and it was the first time ever they'd entered it. And they got out of a group, a 5-team group, where the other 4 teams were all previous Harty winners. So I don't think I think it's impossible to even to comprehend the magnitude of that achievement even now, and like the fact that they could still go further. And I definitely wouldn't be ruling them out against Dungarvan. It just shows that it really is a huge feat for the school, given the size of it. But it's just, it's very sad stuff, really, I suppose, and you'd be hopeful that they could take it another step or two further.
Yeah, like, are they big underdogs heading into the Dungarvan game, though?
I suppose, looking at the team's performance so far across the Harty as a whole, Dungarvan have probably been the best team. They actually lost the last group game, but that was because they had already qualified, so it didn't really matter to them. They have a lot of last year's Waterford All Ireland minor winning team, and of course they have a good lot of the players who were part of the combined Dungarvan Colleges team that won last year and had won the previous year as well. But the Hamilton are used to being underdogs. This was really no one, few anybody would have expected them to have got this far, and they have some excellent players, like Michael Gallan and Trevor Horgan in attack, or dual Cork minors. And to be able to have 2 players of that quality to build your attack around is a massive thing at this level. A lot of schools would just have 1 marquee player, and you're looking for the other 5 to step up. But it's a real luxury for the Hammies that they can do that. And the other players are all good as well. And then in defence they have Chris O'Leary, who's he's only just coming into under 17 this year, so he's another 2 years minor, and he's likely to be in the Cork minor panel this year. And then fullback they have Micheál McSweeney, who he was a Cork minor footballer last year, but he's an excellent hurler as well, and he's a captain, and he really leads from the back, and provides great leadership. And you can see right through the team they have a solid spine, and I don't think they'll be fearing Dungarvan at all. I think they'll be looking forward to the challenge, really.
Yeah, I hope they do well now, in fairness. Moving on to the Charleville CBS and Scullin Trinoda Naefa game. On Charleville, like you mentioned earlier, like, is this a little bit of bonus territory for them, or would they have targeted this stage at the start of the year?
Well, I suppose it's always hard to know. Charleville got to the final a few years ago and were beaten, and then last year they would have been disappointed with how they did. But I suppose you get good years and bad years, and they've really taken their chance this year. The group they had probably wasn't the toughest that they might have got, but in saying that, they won all their games, and they're going well, and they've some very good players, like Edward O'Halloran, Daniel Relihan, Jack Barry, JP Maloney. Like, they've all kind of come good at different times for them. And without being disrespectful to Doon, I think that their team, Charleville, will feel that they can beat, and that they will they'll be disappointed if they're not in the semi-finals come the end of this week.
Alright, moving on then to St. Francis College, Rochestown. They're taking on Thurles CBS. You mentioned Rochestown came out of a very difficult group. Like, how much confidence will they take out of that heading to the game at Thurles?
I think they'll take a lot of confidence, given that they started patchily and then they improved as it went on.
Right.
And even though they're the runners up and Thurles are the group winners, I don't think that they'll be cowed in any way by that. I'd rate the game 50-50 at the very worst from a Rochestown point of view, because if you look at their team, they have some excellent players. And a lot of them would even have had senior experience with Douglas last year, Mark Connor, Aaron Ward, Mark Dolan, all really good players. Then you have Connor and Shane Kingston as well, and then Niall Cashman, who's son of former Cork player Jim. He's centre back, and he's a brilliant player. He really kind of holds the defence together, and I suppose sets up a lot of the attacks for them. And like, when you have that many good players, it's a real bonus that you're not looking to the same two or three the whole time. The quality is spread right throughout the field, and I think this is a brilliant opportunity for Rochestown.
Yeah, I suppose it's kind of difficult to make like any kind of definitive predictions on these games because, well, first of all, the weather has been so bad at the moment. You just know what kind of pitch it's going to be, and young players as well, I suppose. Like,
yeah,
the inconsistency there.
Yeah, find consistency, I suppose, yeah. Especially at this age, that a guy can look like a star one day and then kind of not hit those heights the next day. If I was to make a call, I think Rochestown will win, and I think Charleville will win. And then I hope I'm wrong, but I think Hamilton might just be edged out, that Dungarvan might just have that extra bit of quality. But obviously, if fingers and toes and everything crossed, that the Hammies can get to the semi-finals.
Yeah, and very quickly, the other game, the other quarter-final, Orskull Reese versus Our Lady's Temple Moor. Just in a word, I suppose, who do you think is going to win that?
Well, Orskull won the group that had Hamilton in it, and I think you know, I'd be very surprised if they were beaten.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's Radio FM. That's Dennis Hurley of the Irish Examiner looking ahead to the Hearty Cup action this week in the quarterfinals. Three Cork schools in action, and best of luck to Hamden High School, Bandon, Charleville CBS and St Francis College at Rochestown. Now we're going to talk football. Johnny Dunleavy confirmed as the new Cork City captain during the week. The Donegal native heading into his third season with City. He'll lead John Caulfield's men for the 2014 campaign. John called in to us in studio this weekend to discuss the appointment with myself and John.
The first time John mentioned it to me, you know, I was a little bit surprised, but obviously, you know, delighted that he would consider me for it, first of all. And I mean, as I've said now, it's an honour and something that I hope to do well with next year.
Did you say yes straight away, or did you have to think about it?
I mean, it's not really something you have to think about, you know. It's when you're offered a position like that, I mean, it's sort of a once in a lifetime kind of thing. And no, I was delighted to take it on.
Did John kind of say to you kind of like what the kind of job entails and stuff, what he expects from you as captain?
Not particularly. I mean, I suppose it's really just going to be a case of keeping my head down, and hopefully, you know, first and foremost, you still have to be in the team every week and you have to work hard. And after that, I mean, it's just about, I suppose, trying to lead by example, and hopefully then, you know, we can all, next year, hopefully, if we all pull together really well, I think it can be a really massive year for the club.
Yeah, I suppose there's different types of captains, isn't there? There's ones who go around the place shouting and roaring at players, and then there's ones who just lead by example on the pitch. Like, do you fall in either of those, or are you kind of in between?
I suppose I'm kind of in between, but probably more on the vocal side. I've always been a talker and an organiser since I was very young. I think it just always helped me to kind of focus and concentrate on my game for whatever reason. It's just something that I've done, and so I've tended to, you know, I've been captain of a few teams growing up, and hopefully I can do really well for Cork in that position as well.
A lot of experience in that squad as well. You're talking like the likes of Colin Healy, Mark McNulty, Dan Murray. We'll be looking to them for advice and guidance about being a captain and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, they're all captains in their own right. Mm. I mean, those lads have done everything there is to do in the game. They've won everything there is to win. We've lads that played for Ireland, we've won league titles, cups, everything. And they're lads that, I learn from every single day. I watch them in training, what they do, how they go about their business. And, you know, they're all fantastic professionals and people that, you know, all the young lads at the club need to learn from.
Yeah, just, I suppose, like, growing up watching football, I suppose, especially maybe back in the late 90s and early noughties, the captains would have been bigger characters and stuff like that. Is there anyone from that era, or even football today, that you kind of think is a good captain?
Well, I suppose, you know, looking back, someone like Roy Keane was inspirational, but personally, I'm a Liverpool fan since I was young, and I suppose Steven Gerrard's the one that I've always looked to. I mean, he's just, you know, he's a model professional. I've never heard anyone say a bad word about his training, about his attitude around the place, his attitude to young fellas. And I think he's someone that, you know, everyone can look up to and learn a lot from.
So a lot of extra responsibilities as well, being a captain, that I can think of, like, you know, that you have to be the leader, you have to be almost the focal point of the team, you have to write the programme notes, and that little bit of extra work is not going to faze you too much, is it?
No, I don't think so. Hopefully, no. I mean, hopefully it'll be something that'll take in my stride, and I mean, as I've said, we've loads of leaders within the team. It's not just going to be a case of, we've, our squad's big and strong, and a lot of lads that have, as I've said, have been there and done it all, so it's not like I'm going to be on my own in the position. We've loads of leaders within the dressing room.
Is it a little bit daunting in a way, though, because you are so young, and like you said, there are a few, like, experienced heads around the camp and stuff like that. Will it take time? Do you need to get really comfortable in the role?
I suppose it's something that you will have to settle into a little bit, but at the same time, everyone within the club's been really, really supportive of me since John told everyone in the meeting, and I've had a lot of messages from support at home and in Cork, and people have been really, really good to me, and it's just a case of now getting my head down and working hard, and I suppose repaying all that support.
Speaking of John, how impressed with him have you been since he arrived?
Really good now, to be honest. I mean, pre-season this week's been really tough. The legs are stiff as a board at the moment, but sure, that's to be expected, I suppose. But he's very straight down the line. What he says is what he expects. Training, you train hard, and then you enjoy, you rest and your time off, and I think all the lads have bought into that this week. It's been tough, but it's been a case of, John getting to know us and us getting to know John, and it's all gone well so far.
Do you think you'll have a close link with him during the season because you are a captain? Do you think he'll converse a lot?
I suppose so, but at the same time, he's going to be close to everyone within the squad, and I mean, you'll be looking to other players, you'll be looking to Colin Healy and Dan Murray and boys that, the experienced lads within the group as well. He'll be talking to them too, so I think he's going to be, he's definitely a hands-on manager. He's going to be close to everyone, and I think that'll be really beneficial for everyone.
Yeah, I know you're doing a lot of hard running this week. How long does that kind of training continue now in pre-season, or is there a plan in place?
I don't know of the exact plan so far now. I mean, obviously at the moment the running is just to build it, to get a base, a fitness base for moving forward in pre-season and stuff, and I'd imagine that the runs will get shorter and more intense probably, but that's to be expected. Pre-season's not supposed to be easy for anyone, and we just want it all to be worth it come the first day of the season.
John Coffey has brought in John Cotter as well, who I imagine is looking after a lot of the pre-season. What's the reaction been to John Cotter arriving?
Well, Cotts is a really good coach. Very good, with his drills and with his advice on the game. And we still have Billy Woods as well from last year, who's coming in and doing football sessions and drills and stuff as well. So we have a really, really good coaching, backroom team, I suppose. And everyone's buying into everything really well so far. So, All things are very, very good at the moment.
Yeah, and the signings, I suppose what's impressed me about them is, like, pretty much every player that's been signed has done well in the League of Ireland, and they have been quality signings.
Yeah, no doubt. I think we've recruited very well this year, and it's been quite a statement of intent by the manager, the players that he's brought in. So as long as, you know, we can integrate them well now and everyone gels together and we're ready to go come the start of the season, you know, who knows where we can go.
And with John arriving, with all the signings that he's brought in, there's been a fantastic buzz around the club that I've not seen in quite a long time.
Yeah, the excitement around the city is amazing. Like, I mean, I remember the first time that I met John, I think we met in the Bishopstown bar, and we were just sitting up at a table having a word, and maybe in the course of half an hour, four or five people came up to him and wished him all the best and said they were delighted, you know, that he got the job. And that was just a, you know, sort of a sign to me of the excitement around the place. And I think now, come the first day of the season, you'll see with the crowd that we'll have at Turner's Cross, you know, welcoming the champions back down, Keith Fahey coming back to the League of Ireland and playing against us. Like, it's probably, you know, it's guaranteed that it's going to finish in a boring 0-0 draw now, but I'd say it's going to be a really good occasion. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. This was like it is the start of March when the season gets underway. Do you think that's going to drag a little bit now because of the pre-season training, or do you anticipate it's going to come around quite fast?
No, it comes around quite fast, to be fair. I mean, at the moment, obviously, it seems a long way away. We've got 7 weeks left, and all we can see is running and pitches and hard work. But it's amazing how quickly it does come around. I think we start with our friendly matches next weekend, and we have games, you know, most weeks between then and the start of the season. So it'll go in a lot quicker than you'd expect, and we're all just raring to go.
Yeah, that night in Turner's Cross, when Pats are here, first game of the season, you leading the team out with the captain's armband. How special is that going to be for you?
I mean, it's something that I'm really, really looking forward to, no question about it. There'll be goosebumps that night and a few butterflies and nerves as well, but, you know, when you get out at the end of the day, it's just another football match, and you just go and do what you try to do best, and hopefully we'll come out with a positive result.
Has John set targets for you this season about how far up the table he wants you to finish? Have you spoken with that amongst yourselves as a squad? Or?
We've not really spoken about it yet, but obviously we need to progress from last year. Mid-table's not, you know, we can't afford to finish mid-table three seasons in a row. We probably expected to progress further last year. Unfortunately, it just didn't work out. But I think with the signings we've brought in and the squad we have at the moment, and the buzz around the place, I think there's no doubt that we have a lot of potential to progress this year.
What's your own personal aim and goals for the season?
Really, personally, I just hope to play as many matches as I can. I think it's probably this year it's important for me to have a more settled position. I know I played a lot of different positions last year, and that's fine. You know, if needs be, I don't mind playing other positions, but at the same time, it's nice to have one position and learn your trade and perfect it. Yeah. And that would be, you know, it'd be nice to have a solid run of games in one position, and hopefully keep the head down, work hard, and see where we go.
Do you have a preferred position?
Not particularly. I suppose I've always been the defender. You know, I grew up playing centre half, so I don't mind playing there. I've played a lot of games at right back as well. Either of those probably, but no, not really, nothing too major about playing either of them, you know.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's FM, that is new Cork City captain John Dunleavy talking to us about his appointment earlier on today. Still to come on the show, we'll be talking to race walker Luke Hickey, we'll be looking back on Munster's performance in the Heineken Cup, and after the break we'll be talking to one of the country's finest MMA fighters, Kieran O'Brien. That's all to come between now and 7 on the Big Red Bench.
Red FM's Big Red Bench. Red FM.
Rolling Joe here with you on the bench until 7 o'clock this evening. I'm going to talk to race walker Luke Hickey a little bit later on, and we'll be talking about Munster's performance in the Heineken Cup as well. But now we're going to talk MMA, and one of the country's most exciting up-and-coming fighters calling to us for a chat. Mayfield native Kieran O'Brien has exploded onto the professional scene in Ireland after a stellar amateur career. The MMA clinic fighter picked up his second win as a professional with a dominant win over Mick Brennan at the Cage Warriors event in Dublin on New Year's Eve. O'Brien picked Brennan apart standing up and landed vicious leg kicks again and again, to the point that Brennan was no longer able to stand after taking a kick. And that's where we start our conversation with the man they call the Batman.
Yeah, it was a big part of my game plan going into it. I kind of watched back the video over Mick versus my teammate Sean, and you see Mick build, he had very, very large legs, you know, he was very strong. I knew straight away he had strong legs and stuff, and Sean told me that he was very powerful on the ground with his legs and stuff, so I knew I wanted to attack them straight away. And I started landing off a few hard leg kicks at the start. I think he threw the first and he started off the exchange, so I just had to follow him up, and I could see he wasn't really checking him, he was just taking him, so I was just picking him, kind of just making him weaker as the round was going on.
Yeah, at what point in a fight do you know your game plan is going to work, all the preparation's actually going to work here?
As soon as you kind of find your rhythm and see stuff is working for you, like, you know, after maybe a couple of kicks, I kind of seen he was wincing and it started mark straight away. So I felt a bit of confidence, you know, in my game. I was able to kind of go, okay, I see straight away where a weakness is happening. And I think that was the point in the fight where I kind of, you know, that's where I really kind of set the pressing forward. Is, you know, as soon as your opponent shows a sign of weakness, that's when, you know, your game plan is working, I think.
And he had to switch to southpaw as well, just to get away from those kicks to his left leg.
Yeah, he switched over a couple of times. So I threw one or two, started working on his lead leg or on the other leg then, just to try to take that one off him as well.
With Anderson Silva breaking his leg so graphically 5 days beforehand, is that on your mind when you're throwing those kicks or even when you're thinking about your game plan?
Yeah, it haunted me a couple of days before the fight. Like I said, it was only 5 days before that fight, and I stayed up late watching it over to Christmas, and the next day I was terrorised thinking back on it, you know. I was like, oh my goodness. But I just kind of realised into myself that thousands of Thai fights happen every day, you know, in Thailand and around the world and stuff like that, hundreds of them, and it was just a freak accident, really, like, you know, the way it happened. It could happen again to anyone, it could happen to me, but you know, it's the sport, and I just had to put it to the back of my mind, and just if it was meant to happen, it was going to happen, but it didn't, thank God.
Were you happy with the defensive side of your game though? He didn't seem to hurt you at all.
No, I was happy. Mickey threw one or two nice kicks back me, and he carried one or two nice punches. I always could have defended better, definitely, like, you know, I was working that area a bit more with the guards are taking damage off me. I was happy I walked out with it pretty fresh, to be honest. I was happy, you know, I wasn't too banged up.
And the end of the fight as well, you kind of associate Rear Naked Chokes with being on the ground, but he just kind of almost turned into you standing up. It was almost like Ted DiBiase's $1 million dream, the way you applied it as well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like he just kind of had enough of that stage and he almost gave you
To be honest, I thought half a two to second round when he kind of started folding with the leg kicks, I thought maybe he wasn't going to maybe be able to get back up off the floor after one or two, so I was kind of leaving him and get back up just so I could do that, you know. I thought that was the way I might have finished the fight, and like I said, he kind of turned a bit, he kind of gave his back to me a bit easy, and I hesitated no second, I just jumped on it like a reaction, you know. Obviously I wanted to finish the fight the way I was damaged him by breaking him down, but I was really happy to pull off a submission to show another side to my game as well, that I wasn't just looking for, you know, for strikes.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting, like you said, because like you were obviously hurting him and he was falling on the ground a bit towards the end of the fight. Like, what stops you going to the floor then? Is it just like, I suppose, like just trying to stay cool, I guess?
A bit of patience, I suppose, a bit of experience too, I suppose, you know, like, you know, I've had a good couple of a couple of amateur MMA fights or whatever, and maybe a couple of Thai boxing fights years, and I kind of know from even sparring with Aaron and stuff like that, just to know, just because you see a wounded animal is always the most dangerous, you know, just because he might look hurt, and you know, you're running fucking crazy, and you know, you're gonna pay for that, like, you know. So I was trying to be really patient, and again, pro rounds are 5 minutes long, and I see guys all the time in the UFC or in other shows, they might have a guy hurt, especially pros, you know, and amateur, it kind of goes one way. If the guy is getting beat, it kind of goes that way. And if I were pros, you know, they're professionals for a reason, they come back and forth, like, you know, they're getting a hammer in, and the next thing, all of a sudden, the guy hangs in for that few seconds in the round, or he just gets out of that choke or armbar, and the other guy is gassed out, and all of a sudden the fight becomes a very different fight, you know. I make sure that I don't ever want to kind of get in that, you know. I want to make sure if I have something, I have it, you know. So I try to be really patient with my finishing, you know.
But you're no slouch in the ground either. I mean, like, people associate you with being a Thai fighter, but you're a BJJ purple belt, and maybe people might underestimate that side of your game as well.
Yeah, I don't know, they'd underestimate it, but they definitely see me just because I've had Thai boxing fights, that, you know, maybe that's my strong point or whatever. But I actually, like you said, I've purple belt under Mike Russell, my father, in BJJ, and I've been competing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for a good couple of years also, and the judo, so grappling is a very, very strong point in my game, you know. It's like the backbone of it, really, like, you know. And the striking as well, I love more, I feel like. I love punching and kicking or whatever, but I love, you know, the grappling is definitely a big, big part of my game, and I rely a lot on that.
Yeah, what goes through your head when he taps out?
last second, I suppose, yes. You know, just for that second, it was just a relief. And, you know, that weight for the last couple of weeks that, you know, you've been just thinking about this one person on the planet, you know, that what he's doing through his day. Is he thinking as much as I'm thinking of, is he thinking of me as much as I'm thinking of him, you know, through the day? And just every now a couple of minutes go by where I wasn't thinking of my opponent, you know, over the last couple of weeks through the holidays and all that, through the training and stuff like that, night time and lying in bed, you know. So as soon as that bell is over, or as soon as, you know, I tap the decision was over, it's just such a weight lifted off your shoulder, like, you know. And it's just such a distant memory, you know, right now. But leading up to it, it's everything, like, you know. It's crazy.
That was your second professional fight, your second win, your first professional fight under the Cage Warriors banner. Do you feel like you've put, like, Ian Dean, the matchmaker, on notice as to your skills and your talents now?
I definitely hope so. I definitely hope I made a good impression. It was my second time fighting on the Cage Warriors card. I made my debut as an amateur there a year and a half ago, and I won a good fight decision that night too. But I definitely think I made more of an impression in my pro debut on Cage Warriors last week. So definitely hope Ian maybe might remember me in later shows.
Like, is the onus on you now? Just like, all you can do is hopefully book fights and win the fights. There's not much more you can do outside that, I guess.
No, just in between them, get better in between these fights. You know, I have no fight booked right now at the moment. Yeah, I'm going to get back in there as soon as possible. I also want to improve in between each fight and stuff like that. I think that's a very important part, you know, and not just throwing yourself into fights constantly, because I want to improve, I want to get better, you know, because when you're training for a fight, a training camp, you know, you're just training for one person and training for an individual and whatever, and, you know, your training's going hard. But it's the training outside the fight camps where you're really improving, you know, or you can really open up and you don't have so much pressure and stress on you, you know, you can really evolve, I think, you know.
Your first pro fight was on Battlezone. You were the co-main event there. This time you opened up the card on on Cage Warriors. Is there much of a difference?
To be honest, I prefer obviously opening up the show. You know? I don't know. The last time I was co-main event, you know, it's such a boring wait around. I hear senior teammates going in and out of their battles and matches, you know, seeing how they got on, and then the nerves of them, how their fights went, carrying on to before you walk. It was a big relief, I think, last week that I was on first. I was the first pro fight. I was ready all day. I was ready since the weigh-in, since I got off the scales, you know, and I just couldn't wait to get in there. There was no kind of watching the fights between and just getting that jittery. I was just straight up, got the business done, you know, and I prefer it that way. It won't always happen that way, but, you know, I take it as it comes.
I suppose, like obviously, I suppose as careers progress, like, you slowly start moving up the card, so I suppose that's how you get more used to it, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm going to have to. It's all part of the game, I suppose, the weight and it, you know, so yeah. I just have to play along.
Kieran, with you being such a tall featherweight as well, is it very hard for guys to get inside and kind of strike with you?
Yeah, I obviously use my reach as an advantage. I think I'm one of the, definitely probably made the tallest featherweight in the country at the moment, pro and amateur, I think, anyway. So people always have a problem getting in my range, you know, using my long limbs, my long arms, my long legs, long knees, you know, even on the ground. Was a big factor for me, you know.
Just a word as well on Dylan Sheehan. He fought as well on Cage Warriors that night. Unlucky not to get the decision, but start of a very promising pro career for him.
Yeah, definitely. Dylan was my training partner for this fight camp, you know. Through the Christmas there, we were been working very hard, and he took time off work for this training camp, you know, just so he could put everything into it. And we did, like, we put everything, every hour, minute, day we could into the last couple of weeks into our fights, you know. And unfortunately, he didn't get the nod that night, but what he did do, he gave an outstanding performance, you know. He came out against a more experienced guy who had more pro fights than him. Yeah, very well decorated wrestler, you know. He came out, took Dylan down or whatever, but Dylan fought, or Dylan put up some serious great armbar attempts on him, even in
flying armbar.
Yeah, the third round he came up with, it was like someone really fresh and walking to fight after 10 seconds. He just threw up an amazing flying armbar. I was so unlucky that he didn't get it, you know. It was a bit slippy in the third round and stuff like that, you know. That all comes into effect. So unlucky, he had his back in the second, you know. He fought to the bell, you know, and it was just very unlucky that he didn't get the decision, you know. But he's definitely going to come back a lot better and stronger for me, you know.
Finally, Kieran, what's next for you now?
We're just after taking over the gym outside in the MMA clinic. in Grange, and so myself, my father and Sean Tobin, our MMA coach, so we're putting a lot of time and effort into that at the moment, getting new classes and getting a schedule and a good fight team going for 2014. You know, we have a lot of we won numerous awards last year there from Firehounds and Powerhouse MMA of Gym of the Year, and we got a couple of other awards of Amateur Fighter of the Year and things like that, and which is great. So we want to carry that into 2014 and make it an even bigger year for the MMA clinic, you know. So if anyone is interested in joining up, please come outside and join up, and or find us on Cork MMA Boxing Clinic Facebook page and to find out more details.
The Big Red Bench on Cork sort of found that is Cork fighter Kieran O'Brien is making a very big impact in MMA in this country. Remember his name, he's going to be a very, very big star in the future. Now we are going to talk race walking and talking to another bright rising star, and that is Cork's Luke Hickey. The youngster has been dominant at junior level in Ireland and finished 13th at last year's European Junior Championships. Joe has been speaking to Luke about his last year, Rob Heffernan, and his plans for 2014.
It was the toughest year of my life, without a doubt, but it was extremely rewarding at the end of it.
Yeah,
because I knew it was a challenge, because I had basically had two goals. I had the Leaving Cert, and I wanted to get the European Championships. Mm. And I had no room for anything else in my life. I had to cut out completely social life. Mm. I didn't go out for about 6 months. I hadn't shifted a girl in about 6 months. So the social just had to be completely cut. Whereas I had to miss, and because of training, I had to miss about a month of school between going to races. I was racing in Germany and in Slovakia. I was in Spain. I was in Morocco for 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was all over the place. And it came to the point later on for about the last 2 months, whereas I had to get up about 6 a.m. just to study, just to get in the hours before school. Right. And then go to school, come back and study again, and then go training in the evening, and then come back, and you'd be just wrecked from a long day, and you'd be asleep by about 10, half 10 every night.
Yeah.
And that was just...
Sounds grueling.
It was, yeah, and that's what I had to do almost, because I needed high points for what I was going for.
Yeah.
And I just needed to get the qualifications time as well to get to the European Championship. So it's just, you had no choice, you just... take it day by day almost.
Absolutely. And obviously school is probably the most important thing, I suppose, for your parents especially.
Yeah.
The balance must have been so tough, but like after you finished the Leaving Cert, was that a big kind of, I suppose, weight off your shoulders?
Oh, it was unbelievable. Like I nearly had about one or two breakdowns during the Leaving Cert. I was trying to balance it all, especially during the pre's. It was horrible. I remember it was the day before my final pre. And I rung up Rob, and I was like, I just can't study anymore. I was like, because he told me I could go at the end of my pre's, yeah. Which I never actually did in the end, but which I'm still owed a day for that.
Right.
But I says I can't study anymore. My head's wrecked. And history the next day, and there's just so much just to cram.
Yeah.
And I just said I can't do this. Like I was like, can I just go tonight? Like I just, it'll be no harm. Like, and then he's just like, what are you doing? Just cop on. Like you can't do this. You have an exam in the morning. And then when I was in Morocco, I'd had to bring about 10 kg worth of books over with me. And I had missed about 2 weeks of school. It was between the, on either side of the midterm, of the Easter midterm. And I just had to study. And I was told because I was missing school, I had to get into about 6 hours studying a day, which is crazy. And then suddenly when the Leaving Cert ended, after Leaving Cert, I think it was about 40 hours later, I was back in Spain again on a training camp again.
Right.
To prepare for the Europeans. And it was just amazing. You could actually just relax with your free time instead of learning about chemical bonds or some English poet said or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you could just come down and just lie down when you're finished, and it was so much easier the second time around.
Yeah.
It's tough managing both of them.
I can imagine. Yeah, but look, you got your course in the end anyway, and that all worked out. Talk to us about the Europeans though, and your experience of that.
It was my first major championships. It was the European Junior Championships, and I'd gone into walking championships before, but never won with a junior championship without any of the other walkers there. So it was still a learning experience for me. But it was tough. I didn't really acclimatise properly because I was up in altitude for the 3 weeks before.
Okay.
And I'd realised that from that now, I realised I'd take longer to come back down, because when you come back down from altitude, you can kind of have a dip for a week. Or you can switch on straight away and you're flying.
Yeah.
And I dipped and I didn't have long enough. I only realised it the week after that I raced in Dublin then, and I went to about 40 seconds faster And I was thinking, Jesus, if only this was a week earlier.
Yeah.
I still finished 13th, but it was a horrible race. Like, it was about 30 degrees in the, I think it was about 90 or 100% humidity, and it was just horrible conditions.
Yeah.
But still, it was great. It was great just to even be there, because it was like almost a reward for the training you put in. And then I remember the day after, I just woke up and I was thinking, Jesus, what do I do with myself? This is my first time in about 9 months. I've nothing to do with my day. Everything was done.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I do with myself? Like,
yeah.
I was like, nah, I'm not going to train at all now. I'm wrecked from it all.
Yeah.
And it was just so nice just to be done everything. And it was still accomplished everything I wanted to get. Because if you told me at the start of the year, oh, you'd come 13th in Europe, it's like, I would have taken that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you mentioned the name Rob there a few times, and obviously the man you're talking about is Rob Heffernan.
Yeah.
And like obviously you train with the guy a lot, and I'm sure he's one of your heroes as well, and your friend as well, obviously. But I remember reading an interview in The Echo, I think maybe it was a year ago, or maybe it could even be 18 months ago now, about how you kind of started out with Rob, and you almost like messed the whole thing up, didn't you? Did you turn up late?
It was my first ever time training with him. I didn't even know him at this stage. One of the people in my club got onto him and said, oh, can he come train with you?
Yeah.
And he said, look, if he wants to come, meet me at this time. And I goes, oh yeah, that's great, I'll go. And it was a Monday morning. I was supposed to meet him at night, like 9 o'clock out in Douglas, and I'd slept in. And then I was thinking, oh no, what have I done? And then, because I was on to his friend who was training with him at the time, Timmy was the name, and I was on to him, I texted him saying, oh, sorry, Timmy, I slept in, can I come tomorrow? And he goes, yeah, I'll meet us at this time. And then, so I goes, grand job now. And then, so I was supposed to meet him in Douglas the next day, but on my out there, I dressed in my gear and everything, I had GA shorts, I had my GA shorts on and my leggings underneath, and then I was running out there, and then when I got to the spot, I realised I was supposed to be somewhere else and I didn't have my phone, so I couldn't contact him and tell him where I was. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to mess with him again. I was like, oh no, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And then just luckily he drove past and then they saw me and stopped, and I got in the car, and Rob was saying to me, he was like, Jesus, if you didn't come today, you're going to be cut. You're never allowed to ever come again. And I was like, Jesus, I'm lucky.
It's a bit of a turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really odd.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, talk to me about the influence Rob has had on you, maybe in the last 18 months, because like Rob is such a nice guy. He's an incredibly nice guy. We know him very well on this show. But like, if something needs to be said, I always get the sense that he'll say it to you as well. Completely. He's so straight.
Oh, like that. That's the way he is. He is. He's, if there's a problem with anything, because you're so scrutinized with your technique, because when you're at his level, you have to look at every single fine detail.
Yeah,
and scrutinize it. If there's anything wrong with it, he'll say it to you. And even yesterday, I was getting given out to you about my technique. It's just because you're always trying to perfect it and always trying to learn it. So anyway, so anything wrong, he'll always say it to you. But yeah, that's at the sporting side of it. And then you could switch off. Then after training, we'll chat away again. We're just friends, but business is business. Like
on Rob and all his success and stuff like that. Like how positive. Or like, how much do you take out of that in terms of the sport itself, and I suppose the kind of spotlight that has been shone on it now after his success?
Oh, it's great for the sport in general now, because people have not a lot of people would known about it even before Rob, and so now it's a lot in the public eye, a lot more because of Rob, and now he's the shining figure for the whole sport.
Yeah,
and he's the perfect one to have because he's world champion. So you'd see anywhere now on any day of the week. Especially on Sundays when so many people would be out on some of the paths.
Yeah.
Like if we're down Blackrock Castle or something, there'd be people stopping or waving them every 50 metres or something, like saying, oh, well done, how well done, nice to see you. And all stuff like, and it's great to see that the people have, more people now know more about the sport and have a better respect for it now. And when you find out of how fast he goes over, say, 50 kilometres, it's like a sub-3-hour marathon, like it's ridiculous times
that
he can do. So people, it's great for the sport. So hopefully it'll get only bigger from here, which is what we're trying to get with the High Performance Centre we're trying to set up here. Yeah. Well, more so Rob and Marion are trying to set it up to get more athletes in here. Like we've a British walker, who's two British walkers, after moving over, with one switching allegiance to Ireland now.
Great.
It's in the process at the moment, but it's coming slowly but surely. There's even a house now that there are a few of them are living in together, like, so it's a real great setup that we have, and it's hoping it's only going to get bigger and it's better things for the sport coming.
Yeah, and I suppose for you, in terms of your career,
Like it's not like you've just joined them now. You've been there now for a few years, and you probably couldn't be in a better place.
Yeah, sometimes when we're out training, and I could be at the back of the group or something, or a bit off them, and I feel kind of bad that if people see us, and I'm just, it looks like I'm lagging behind. But then when you realise you're training with the same place as a world champion, and two lads who were 20th. Who were 25th and 29th in the World Championships.
Yeah.
And you kind of realise that you are supposed to be behind because you're just not as good as them because they've been at it for so many years.
Yeah.
And that they're just so much, they're still a lot better than you. But it's the perfect place to be if you want to move on in terms of development and get faster over time, because these people are, they're so professional in the way that they do things.
Yeah.
That it's you couldn't ask for a better setup.
Yeah, I can imagine. And like for you now, obviously, like you did so well at junior level nationally and at a European level as well. You're moving up to senior now. How difficult is the jump?
Very, very difficult is the simple way. I was only saying to lads the other day, and I was saying, I was coming into Red FM. Now I say to them, what am I going to do for next year? And then Rob says, survival. That's it. That's all you're really looking for next year, is either adapt or die almost.
Okay.
Because you're going from, say, 70 kilometres a week to now you're consistently doing about 110 kilometres every week, which is training every morning and training maybe 5 or 6 days in the evening. And include that with, I do 3 gym sessions in the morning as well at 7 o'clock.
Mm.
So it's just see if you can get through the year injury free and see how fast you can get on, because it's just the adaptation over to 20 kilometres because it's double the distance, so it's so much more mileage you have to get in. And then you have to realise when you're racing the top fellas in the world, there's no, because juniors was so nice, you know, it's only 10 kilometres and you have a small age group, now you're against everyone and you're just completely at the bottom of the pile again.
Yeah, just in terms of the tactical side of things as well, how much does that ramp up when you go up to senior?
It's very tough. Even the mental game of a 20k is very tough to get your head around.
Right.
I'd raced my first 20k before Christmas, and it was on the 22nd up in Dublin, and it was so hard. It was because I've never gone past 10k in a race before, and you're going at this pace and it's hard. And then physically it wasn't too bad because I had good training, winter training in, but it came to about 12 or 13 kilometers, and you've 7 or 8k left, and you're thinking, Jesus, how am I going to get through this? This is so hard, and you're thinking, oh, but if I drop out of 15, I might be all right, you know, because I'm going fast enough. But then as you just kind of, you have to persevere through, because you know you're going to be racing international 20Ks later on in the year. And if you don't have one in the bag before, you know, it's a total baptism of fire almost.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
The way again, and then, but it's, once you get through it, you can kind of see, you know, for next time that what you'll go through, so that it'll build for next time, but it's so tough. Just to do, because it's 90 minutes of hard work, and to stay focused and concentrate and believe in yourself almost that you can do it and that you won't die at all, it's a tough thing to get around, but it's just something you have to grow with, and that it'll develop over the years, and you hope it will anyway, and with the training it'll just become easier to go faster and faster as it goes along.
Yeah, have you taken out your 2014 calendar and went through the months and picked out events that you want to compete in? Have you thought that far ahead?
No, that's normally, I leave that all up to Rob. It's kind of, he'll decide what races we're doing, what camps we're doing.
All right.
Where we're going to, say, we'll be racing in Switzerland on just the day before Patrick's Day. And we'll be flying off to South Africa for 3.5 weeks up in altitude, which will be just a tough, tough slog. And it's about almost 2,000 metres, which is a killer to the body, you know. It's just so hard because there's so much less oxygen up there.
Yeah.
And so it'll be kind of, he'll structure the year. So that's where I'm very lucky, where the group is very lucky, where he has another person working with him, where he makes out a schedule where they'll decide. So basically I'm getting the benefits of all of his is so well structured and so well planned.
Yeah.
So then I almost get to just go along with it.
There's a nice template there for you already, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, and like obviously you said, there's Munster Indoors coming up pretty soon, so like that's definitely next on the list anyway. That is happening.
Yeah, that's next weekend. Now the team of us will go up to it. It's an early season indoor race, so it's a tester just to see what you've done from your winter training, because we haven't done that many sessions. It's just a slog of continuously training, but it's important. You still have to do a good time there. Like last year when I came into the indoor season, Rob was saying to me that if you don't set a PB here, you might as well retire. So there's always kind of, you're always being tested and you're always being watched. And if you can't perform the day, then you have nothing really to show for all the long mileage you've put in over Christmas and all the hard work. Like, we haven't had a day off since Christmas now, and just a continuous slog, and you have to show for your work.
Mm.
So it's always the scare factor that you have to perform. Yeah. No matter what, no matter how small, even if it's Munster, because Munster's still big, but you're taking on everyone from Munsters to internationals. It's still, you have to perform every time. Otherwise, you could be cut at any stage.
Yeah, is that pressure difficult to deal with?
It is. You just kind of have to forget about it. You just have to, you know, the people. You know, you can get wound, you can get almost screw yourself over before you even start a race with, oh, I didn't do this or I didn't do that.
Yeah.
The only thing you can think of is all the things you did do. The normal thing I like to do is think of the tough trainings that you've done. And you know, it's like, Jesus, I got through that. Like, that was tough. And somehow I was managed to do it. So it's like, this should be fine. Like,
yeah.
And this, you have to just push yourself to a certain level in a race and just hope to God you don't die. And you just have to go and just stay there at a certain pace and just hang on for dear life if you can.
Yeah, like obviously you're very excited, but you're anticipating this is going to be one hell of a tough year in terms of competing and stuff, like Rob mentioned the word survival. So, like, is that hard to get your head around that? Like, I've got a really difficult 12 months in front of me here.
Yeah, basically, like the norm. It's nice during normally if you have a championship to look forward to, but this year for me, there's nothing to look forward to. Really, there's no kind of there's obviously you have to get better and better, but there's no real championship in August.
You're not building up to anything kind of thing, is it?
No, like, yeah, say for next one for me now wouldn't be till European under-23s, which is next year.
Okay.
But for now, it's kind of, you just have to get through the year, you just have to, and it's a scary thought that it's just, you're just trying to survive. Like I almost said, there was a day in December where your body can break down. It was the last week of college and it was just on the Friday and I barely could train. That my body was so tired from the accumulation. It was a heavy, heavy training week. And I was so tired from just want to be finished college as well at that stage, like, just because the Christmas break was coming. And it was just tough. And like, it came, but then you just have to build yourself up again and just realize it's going to happen again.
Mm.
That you can break down, but hopefully you won't too often because it's bad really for training. But like, even now, all the lads have been sick in the last week and I'm the only one who hasn't been sick now so far.
Yeah.
So I'm just hoping that I'm the last man standing at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that I'm not going to get sick now, because you know, if you miss training, it could set you back or anything. Like, it's,
yeah,
you just have to put in the training.
Yeah, sorry to inform you, I was sick. So if you do get sick, you can blame it on me as well. So it's just to talk like very finally. Obviously, you mentioned you didn't get the shift for 6 months, but you have got the shift since, because you do have a girlfriend and your family and all that kind of stuff. Like, it must be tough for them as well. Because are you ever around? Around the place or anything like that?
No, I just kind of, I could be gone for weeks on end and they wouldn't see me, like, and they just kind of do the odd phone call. And, you know, you don't really say much to the parents. You're just kind of like, how are you getting on? Fine, you know, I'm just training away, you know.
Yeah.
Or something, I could leave at 9 o'clock in the morning now on a college day, about halfway or something, and you mightn't be seeing again till halfway that night. And just because you're between the college and the training and everything, you just mightn't be seen, but they kind of, I'm trusted now after I did well with last year. It's kind of, it's learning to let me alone and do my own thing, because I seem to have got it well enough at this stage.
Big Red Bench on Cork's FM, and that is Luke Hickey, Corkman, there talking about his career as a race walker. Very, very interesting stuff from him indeed. And the full extended interview will be on redfm.ie/BigRedBench a little bit later on this evening. Now, before we hand you over to Ashley for Green on Red, it's been a great weekend for the Irish provinces. All four winning their Heineken Cup matches. Munster through to the quarterfinals after they beat Gloucester 20-7 at King's Home last night. Tries from Keith Earls and Peter O'Mahony secured the win for Munster. The rest of their points coming from the Boot of Ian Keely. Let's look back on that and other action over the weekend. Justin speaking to Irish Independent rugby writer Cian Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a great win. The defensive performance was outstanding. I think I was a bit surprised they had to do so much defending, if I'm honest. The Gloucester, I don't think we should make any bones about it, aren't a great size. Now, they threw a lot at Munster, but their backline play was very disjointed. I'd still be worried about if Munster came up against a good side, but I mean, I suppose the old cliche, you can only beat what's in front of you, and Munster were by far the better team. And you know, I thought there was actually more points there and they could have made it more comfortable for themselves, but there was a lot of positives. I mean, the defensive play was excellent. I thought the back play, I thought, was much improved, as it has been in recent weeks. You know, obviously much is constantly made of this Rob Penny game plan, but even in the build up to Keith Earls' try, there was a lot of forwards involved in
offloading the ball, and it was definitely more positive. But I don't know, I just thought like King's Home isn't the fortress it used to be. I think Gloucester have lost 6 times maybe this season, so I think in fairness most Munster fans are fully aware of that, but and no one's getting ahead of themselves, but there's still a lot of work to do for Munster. But yeah, it was a good win, and it keeps them well in control.
Yeah, I saw you tweeting after the game last night the amount of tackles both sides made, and Munster made 131 and Gloucester 36. That's an incredible stat, really, isn't it, from both sides?
Yeah, I mean that tells the story in itself. But again, I'd go back to that's a savage amount of defending for a side who were clearly, you know, a better team, and like, you know, there'd be pluses to take out of it. But I think the negative is that they did have to make so many tackles. I mean, 131 is a huge number. Now, it's probably worth pointing out that they missed 16 of those tackles. I thought at times in the loose, especially, there was too many tackles being missed. But as I said, I think Munster were lucky that they came up against a Gloucester pack who Munster were dominant up front, but then outside them, I think Billy Twelvetrees had a bit of a stinker, I think it's fair to say. I mean, any time he got the ball, I don't even think the players around him knew what he was going to do. And I think even in the second half, that pass where we saw might have been 12-3 firing the ball off one of his players' heads, who was only a couple of yards away from him, kind of just summed up Gloucester for me. I mean, they were good, but if that was a better team, I think Munster could have been in a bit more trouble.
Ian Keatley was under a lot of pressure going to last night's game, I suppose, after what happened in Ulster last week. And I know Rob Penny was kind of defending him during the week, saying he had a groin injury, and that was a lot down to the reason that some of those kicks were wayward. Were you impressed with him last night?
Yeah, Keatley was excellent. I think Penny deserves a huge amount of credit for the way he's handled the out half situation this season. He set his stall out from day one, in fairness, that he was, you know, Keatley was going to be his main man. Obviously, JJ Hannan has been playing really well, and a lot of Munster fans would have been calling for him to come in, but Penny stuck by his man, and he came up trumps for him last night. I mean, okay, maybe once or twice he might have overplayed the chip throughs, but I mean, I think that was probably down to the fact that that's the instructions that he was given. But I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, his groin had been heavily strapped for the last few weeks. Even watching him in training, you could see that. But last night it was much better. I mean, his striking of the ball was, you know, much more crisp. I mean, the ball he split the post for all of the penalties that he had and conversions that he kicked. So it was a big game for him, because there was question marks, especially after him going down to Perpignan. You know, could he handle these big away European games? And despite Gloucester not being the team that they were, still going to King's Home is a fortress. And he came up very well. And it kind of, I suppose, it was pleasing for Penny as well, who was rewarded for the faith he showed him.
Absolutely. It is kind of, I don't know, is it an amazing turnaround, but it's a kind of a surprising turnaround since that defeat in Murrayfield, that they go into the final game and they've already qualified. Obviously they deserve praise, because, like you said, like the old cliche goes that you can only be what's in front of you. But like, is the reason they're in this position because maybe the pool is actually quite poor?
I would tend to agree with that. I think I've been making that point a lot in recent weeks. But and in fairness, I would say that I don't think Munster fans are under any illusion that it is a very soft pool. I mean, we know how the French kind of, you know, go about their things. If they get knocked out early, they shut up shop. And Gloucester are struggling Premiership size. Edinburgh is struggling in the Rabo. But I mean, yeah, Munster have done well. They've bounced back well. But I mean, getting out of the pool, they've gotten up to the task now. If they're to get a home quarter final, and if they don't, I mean, a trip to France could be on the cards. I mean, you could be looking at Clermont or Toulon, and that's a completely different story. Obviously they'll have learned a lot from the semi-final last year, but you know, in terms of intensity, it's going to be a massive step up the quarter-final.
Yeah, what do they need to do next week? So do they need to get a winning bonus point and then hope other results go their way, or will a winning bonus point be enough for them?
Yeah, I suppose that's the, I'm still trying to work that out myself. I don't think I could be wrong, I don't think a winning bonus point will necessarily guarantee them a home quarter final, especially when you look at some of the other pools. As I said, Ulster's pool, Ulster are on top with 22 points, you know, which is four more than Munster on. So, I mean, they will, I think, need results to go their way. But, okay, you know, Munster, it's going to be this dreaded Sunday morning kick-off at home. Yeah. They played Edinburgh at the same time in Toma Park last season, and I was at that game myself. It was such a dour contest that they eventually got the bonus point, but it was very late in the second half, and you'd be hoping that they won't make it as difficult for themselves again, and especially after the first defeat, as you said, in Murrayfield. The home support, I think, will want to see a bit of revenge exacted. But yeah, I suppose it's a tricky one. Like, I mean, they're true to the quarterfinals. Edinburgh have nothing to play for, but every side that comes to Thomond Park is going to want the scalp. But yeah, a bonus point win will be needed, but I'm still unsure if that will guarantee them a home quarter final.
Yeah, the calculators will definitely be out like late tonight and tomorrow. Just to talk about the other Irish provinces, Ulster's win on Friday night, that sets up probably what's going to be the tie of the final round of games against Leicester next weekend.
Yeah, that should be a cracker. I think Ulster will probably be disappointed with themselves not picking up a bonus point on Friday night against what has to be said was a largely second string Montpellier team. Now, obviously, Montpellier played quite well, but Ulster had enough there to get that bonus point, and hopefully that doesn't come back to cost them. But yeah, Ulster are going along really nicely this year. I quite fancy them to do quite well, but yeah, you're right. The game against Leicester next weekend is going to be huge to see who tops that pool, because there's only 2 points between them. I think Ulster are 22, Leicester after a bonus point win in Treviso are on 20. So it's all set up for the perfect showdown.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. Leinster winning today in France against Cast, so they only need a point next week to secure their quarter final place. They should get that against Osprey, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they should. It was an excellent performance from Leinster today after 14 points down to come back in a tough place to get a win, even if Cass maybe had their eye off the ball. But yeah, I mean, Jimmy Gothbert's put in an excellent performance, and you talk about Munster's fly half position, Leinster's is very similar. Yeah. And again, Matt O'Connor seems to be backing Gothbert as his number one, and he repaid that today with 2 tries.
Yeah, and
a brilliant overall performance. So yeah, I think Leinster, like, they should be getting out of the pool, but I think home quarter final is possibly that bit too far at this stage.
Yeah, that looks likely. All right, and very finally, Connacht winning yesterday. Yeah, and that's 3 wins from 5 in the competition this year. So that's a fantastic campaign for them. Like, not to be kind of disrespecting them or downplaying them at all.
No, you're right. I mean, I certainly can't remember the last time we went into the game match day 6 when Connacht were in with a chance of advancing. Mm. I mean, it's absolutely brilliant. But I think what's really good to see is that Pat Lam giving the young lads a chance. I mean, Jack Carty started at out half yesterday, and Darragh Leader was in at full back. And, you know, these are a 21 and 20-year-old, and yeah, it would have been much easier for Lam to pick more experienced Dan Parks. But it was brilliant to see him go with Carty, and he played really well, and he's one to watch for the future. But yeah, I mean, Connacht, it's a slim chance. They're going to Saracens next weekend, who Saracens themselves will make no mistake about it, will be looking for probably a bonus point win. But I mean, Connacht will take huge credit from their results in Toulouse last December, and you never know. It's not beyond the realms of possibility, but yeah, they've had a really good season, and hopefully they need to start bringing that in now to the Rabo as well. You know, it can't just be in the Heineken Cup, but yeah, certainly signs of improvement, and it's brilliant for Irish rugby.